When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Great future. We're talking real money.
Welcome to Talking Real Money, where we talk about money. Really. I'm Don. Tom's there. This is the place to go if you want to understand how money works realistically. Yeah, there's a lot of gobbledygook and garbage out there, but you don't need to listen to that. It's not that hard. It just requires some discipline and some understanding of the basic rules of money. And that's what we're here to impart. How to get to where you need to be in the future financially. And then once you get there, how you live for the rest of your life reasonably comfortably. And one of the big issues, questions that plague us all as we're trying, those of us who are actually trying, some of us don't try, but of those of us who are actually trying to put away money for retirement, our big future goal, ask this question a lot. How much do I really need to have saved to retire comfortably? You know, the number, we've heard numbers all over the place, million, 2 million. There are all kinds of rules of thumb, but Tom, how much do we actually need to retire?
But you don't need that much because you're going to have the silver bullet parked right next to my house. It's hooked to
if I could convince Debbie, I would just live in the Airstream.
I would
be perfectly happy.
Yeah.
I mean, look at me. This voice. I never lived this little room.
I know, but it would be a bit loud for her. That's a big question. How much do I need to save? Am I saving enough? And as you know,
so really, I'm working too hard if I just live in the trailer, right? I can just slack.
There's no answer to this. It's different for everybody, right?
Okay. I mean, well, that was an incredibly short episode. Thank you all for being with us. It's been a great show. The shorter the better. We're coming in under 2 minutes. I can't believe it.
There are some fascinating numbers. Yeah, there's some fast. The Federal Reserve does a survey of consumer finances, which I didn't even know until I read this piece. According to their 2022 survey, and I just move right up to ages 55 to 64, they say the average retirement savings for those aged 55 to 64, the average is $537,000. The median is $185,000, which I think is
how much?
$185,000.
Yeah, what the median tells you, just for those of you who aren't math whizzes, the 537 shows you that there are a lot of people there's a big group of people with a whole lot of money
exactly.
That skew the average. But when you flatten that out over the entire population, wow, we got some people. That means there's a ton of people with zeros.
Yeah, a lot of zeros, and then some with some really big balances. A Fidelity's analysis in 2023 of 3,500 savers found that half believe they were not on target for their retirement needs. But how do you figure all this out, right?
Well, I got to tell you, by those numbers, I would say they are right when they say half of them aren't on track, because even at $537,000, you're talking $1,500 a month in income you can generate from that roughly.
Is that 15 times 12? Okay, that makes sense. Okay, but according to the author, there are three methods to estimate your retirement spending. Okay, three.
Yeah, okay.
Number one, the author says, replacing 80% of your income means your lifestyle can essentially stay the same. Well, you're not paying Medicare or Social Security taxes, although you might be paying taxes on Medicare, or making contributions to a 401k or IRA. In other words, taking the number you're spending today and saying you're going to spend 20% less. Now, this is a topic that's come up before. I'm reluctant to run plans that way for people because it makes me nervous.
Yeah.
People have a way of finding a way to spend that other 20%.
Plus, your spending changes. And more money is now going to start shifting away from things that are fun as you get older to things that are necessary, like staying alive, long-term care. Those things are those are more expensive than a trip to Europe.
Like,
not more
like
expensive than a trip to Africa, well, but more expensive than a
nothing
trip.
Nothing I've found is more expensive than a trip to Africa. Boy, they better be rubbing my feet while I'm watching the rhinos, you know, roll around in the river. But okay. So
that's hippos. Rhinos are out in the plains. Oh, the hippos okay roll around in the river.
I'm glad you're, I wish you were going to be there whispering to me. That's not a,
They're both overweight.
Hopefully it's not me rolling around in the water.
But most of that is muscle, so don't mess with them.
I'm going to stay a long way away and count on that. Okay.
Actually, which is the more dangerous? Okay, trivia. Which is the more dangerous of the two animals? Which has killed more people, rhinos or hippos?
I'll go with the hippos just because it seems obvious.
It's absolutely correct.
Okay. Should make sense.
Hippos.
Makes sense.
They just sit on you.
Yeah. <ooh. laughs> Let's go to number two. I find this interesting. The financial services firm Fidelity suggests that savers can target a much lower income replacement percentage than 80% to maintain a similar lifestyle to the decade before retirement. A 45% income replacement target is sufficient.
What?
Which I think is crazy. That's what they're saying. And they say to do that, you need to have saved 10% of your annual salary by age 67.
What?
No, pardon, not 10%, 10 times. I misread that.
I was going to say 10%. What? 10% of your annual salary, that's like what? $10,000?
10 times.
All right, so let's say you get 10 times.
Yeah, right.
But the reality is 45%?
I know. That seems crazy.
Think about that for a minute. Today, in this real estate environment, the amount we pay, most retirees go into retirement with a mortgage for at least a while. Your mortgage, your taxes, your insurance, all of the things that go into just housing yourself can amount to 40 to 50% of your income for a lot of people. Wow.
Yeah. No.
So that leaves you with 0% for anything other than a roof.
Yeah, I mean,
unless you live in the trailer. Maybe it's the trailer.
You got the trailer. You're parked right next to the house. That's an interesting number. I don't think there is a correct number there, but let's talk about a number that I do like, that I kind of like, that I think still works, despite the fact that it's been abused, put away, blah, 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 is the 4% rule, because that's number three. That suggests retirees can safely withdraw 4% of their portfolio in the first year of retirement. If they adjust annual withdrawals for inflation, they should not run out of money in most market conditions. But what this doesn't say is you got to be properly invested. You got to rebalance that. You can't just, I'll just put it on the bank.
No, because the 4% rule will not work in the bank.
We've clearly showed that.
It would have never worked in the bank, ever, ever. Because remember, it's 4% adjusted for inflation.
And then they go on to talk about a real example. If your nest egg needs to generate $60,000 a year and you anticipate 25 years in retirement, you need $1.5 million.
Mm-hmm. See, that's easy.
In that case, there's a 95% chance your savings will last, which, by the way, 95% is a very successful retirement calculation. Everybody wants 100. You're not going to get 100. That, and by the way, that number comes from Vanguard's retirement calculator. If half of the portfolio is invested in stocks, 30% in bonds, and 20% in cash. Remember, got to be invested.
And that is maintained by rebalancing.
Yep.
Because it's going to get out of balance over those 25 years.
Indeed.
Probably it will. Leaning more heavily toward equities, which means that you'll have more risk in a downturn, which means you might do something stupid, destroying the whole process. Wow, these numbers.
Yeah, the numbers are a little squeezy. And I don't like 20% cash. But the author does go on to raise some other things that I think people have a tendency to overlook. That is, number one, you laughingly talk about moving your van to some location and parking on a street corner. But your retirement location is more important than you believe.
Yeah.
For example.
Do not retire in the Seattle metro area.
I was just going to say, you know that I have a relative who wants to move here. I'd love to have him here. I love him. He's a great guy. We have a lot of fun together, but trying to figure this out is a nightmare to move from another place in the country to come here just for the aforementioned housing costs alone. It is so expensive. I'm really honestly thinking if we want to do this, it's going to have to be somewhere well north of Seattle or well south of Seattle. And the thing is, I don't want to move because my grandkids are here. But your retirement location should be carefully considered, especially if retirement is going to be tight.
You want a number? Your brother lives in Indiana, right?
He does.
The average home price in Indiana?
Like $300,000 or something?
$230,000. Yeah. The average home price in the Seattle metro area?
$600,000 or
something. $850,000.
Yeah, I mean, you don't need to know anything more than that. That's the problem right there, right? So, where you retire is so important. And then there's this aspect of spending that most people, you know, we're just in denial about for the most part. People think, well, I'll be okay. Yeah, I can still do this. I can still do that, et cetera, without really considering what that means along, especially I see in early retirement. People retire at 60, 61. They think, well, I'm going to start taking three trips. We just had a client come in, four trips a year, expensive trips. I got the money.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I got the money now.
Yeah, you got the money now, but man, I wouldn't want to run out at the other end. That's one. And then the date. This is something you and I have talked about. So Don and I are in our mid 60s. Mm-hmm. We like working. I like the job I have. They pay me fairly, I think, for it.
And it gets him out of the house, which is really the best part of it.
The number three is the big one. I'm still waiting for the day. I really get pissed and go, you know what?
I'm out of here.
Doesn't matter. So, but your retirement date is critical for a couple reasons. People don't have a tendency to think about this. Number one, if you quit relatively early, you're not saving anymore. Number two, if you quit early and you don't have the necessary savings to draw on, you're claiming Social Security too early and you're giving up a ton of money. Remember, it's still less than 10% of America that waits until age 70 to take it, which is when most people should take it. Yeah. So it takes more thought than that. And then I will say it again. Most people don't think this through. Most people do it way too casually. And those are the people that get in trouble. So let's go back to some of the examples. And I know this is a favorite of yours. Rather than the 4% sort of fixed withdrawal,
you're going to do flexible, aren't you?
Because it just makes sense for most people. And by the way, you pointed this out for the last 25 years. Most people in their life have a little flexibility. They could do this and not do this, and you could spend less here and you could, et cetera.
You could do Africa 1 year. You could do.
I'm never going back to Africa. This is a one shot deal. Well, we'll see, but that would be the plan.
You could do Portland, Oregon the next.
Exactly. Plan on more spending at the beginning and probably more spending at the end. Right? Because your health may need
good
it.
Good point, because the health costs, they do grow. They do grow.
Another one I think is absolutely critical. Please, please, please. And by the way, when I talk to people on the phone, they always say, I know I'm not going to do this. Please wait on Social Security. There should be way more people that are taking this at 70 years old than 9%.
Looked at mine just a few minutes ago, and the difference that just over 2 years makes for me is $800 a month.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money to wait 2 years. Wow,
that's crazy. Yeah, that just, please. You know, and Don and I both have significant others that would have a huge impact on, because I expect I will pass first and she will inherit my benefit. And then finally, and I know I've said this once, twice, three, four, 10, get a professional review. Don't do it. I mean, you could be a do-it-yourself investor. You can. That's great. You've been a great saver, but have somebody look at your plan.
Okay, I love that you say that. I do. I love that you say that. But the problem is most people are going to go, you know, I need a professional. Hey, friend, with whom I'm in a club or go to church. Do you know anybody who's a good fiduciary financial advisor? And they'll go, oh, yeah, you should call my guy at Morgan Stanley or my gal over at Edward Jones. That's Prudential, what they're going to say.
Prudential, something like that. So
that is what they're going to say. That's 99% of the time.
And because they make up 99% of the industry. Remember, right. It's a very small number that are 100% fee-only fiduciaries. You got to find them. We've got a few on our website. Doesn't have to be us, but you've got to find one. You've got to get the review, and you got to tell them up front. And I think it's legit. People tell us all the time, look, I just want the review. I just want a plan. I'm going to take care of this on my own. Fine. We're not going to pressure you. And yeah, we're the
come on. How many? Okay. Let's talk about the fact that 1% are 100% fiduciaries, according to a study done by MarketWatch several years ago. What are the odds that you're going to find a local fee-only 100% fiduciary advisor who's going to help you for free.
Well, that might be more difficult. Okay, fine. That's fine. No, that's still, but still that's okay because you go in and they write you a plan for $2,000-$3,000.
Okay, yeah, paying for a plan is a good thing.
That's for your retirement. That's worth paying $2,000-$3,000 to make sure everything's okay. That's okay.
Because
so you can't find anybody help for free. Sure. I get
it. And there have been some studies done. I think Harvard did one where they found that those who have a plan end up with far more money in retirement than those who don't.
It's absolutely. So that's not a pitch. That is not a sales
pitch. I know.
It
sounds like one.
It has to, right? Because we're in the business. But
I know.
It's really not. It's really just begging you to do it right.
It's so funny because it's one of those things that even though I think we have an incredible firm, I really do. I think we do great work for people. It's always in the back of my mind as one who has primarily for most of my career been an advocate for my listeners.
Yeah.
I'm always thinking, gosh, you know, it would be nice to not have that appearance of a conflict.
I think if you asked people that listen to this show and have listened to you for the last 30 whatever years, they're still going to say you're an advocate for your listeners. And we are.
I hope so.
And I think people would call me would say, yeah, I talked to Tom and he told me to go do X, Y, and Z and I never talked to him again and it was the right thing.
Because if we were bad people, we'd be selling indexed annuities.
Well, we still might. We're not dead yet.
No, I'm not going to.
The silver bullet
I have apologized. I have apologized for my past advocacy of active management. Now, I've never been an advocate for commissions or high fees, but I have been an advocate for active management in the past. And I have apologized. For that lapse in judgment, that lack of knowledge, I have not heard you apologize yet for the commodities commercial.
We don't have enough time. We don't have enough time to do it. That's the problem. I would. That would be a separate, like, 2 or 3 show addendum. There's not enough time for me to apologize.
Question time, then, to get Tom out.
I'll just ask for general anything I did before, please just let me go.
He needs people intervention.
There's a lot. All right. Chad writes us from Delavan, Wisconsin. Hi, Tom and Don. I've been addicted to your podcast for the last 2 years. Thank you, Chad, for that. I will be in the
accumulation. There's a Tom and Don Anonymous now, apparently, somewhere.
Addictive. I will be in the accumulation stage for the next phase for the next 4 years. I've recently cured my hodgepodge-itis in all my accounts. Yay, you. Good for you, Chad.
It's hard to do on your own. It's not
easy.
It's a bad disease.
Just came in here with somebody who had 12 different accounts and like 80 securities. In my non-qualified account, I have 80% in VTHRX, which I looked up. That's the Vanguard Target Date 2030 fund. 10% in AVDV. That is the Avantis. I forget DV now. 10% in the AVUV. That the AVUV is U.S. small cap value. The AVDV is
small cap value. Okay. International small cap value.
International.
Okay. International. AVDV. So what he's doing, that makes sense. Okay. That's fine.
But here's the part that's the question. I believe I heard Don say that TDFs, target date funds, should not be held in a non-qualified account because of potential tax implications. Mm-hmm. Remember, Vanguard had this problem a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Where they had the huge distribution. It wouldn't be too complicated for this one account to sell the TDF and get VTI, VXUS, and BND and keep the small caps. Thoughts? I would do the alternative. I would go with
VTI, too. I would, VXUS, I mean, if you have the mindset, and this you do. I mean, the fact that you got rid of your hodgepodgeitis, that you started getting into high quality ETFs and funds, that you got a target date. If you can stick with the discipline and rebalance on a regular basis among those funds, I would think you will be a fraction of a percent better off in terms of tax ramifications.
And beyond that, the disaster that Vanguard created a few years ago is not a potential then. It's just that couldn't exist again.
Mm-hmm. In other words,
when they had to do that with the target date
funds. Right, but even with with target date funds, when they rebalance, they will create taxable events in a taxable account.
But that's what I'm saying. Then you don't hold the target date fund in that account, and you eliminate that as a possibility. I think for that reason, sure. And I like the fund selection you've got there, keeping the small caps, So it's a little more complicated, but if you can handle it, Chad.
It's not very. It's what, five funds?
Five funds. So you're okay. All right. This comes from Karen, who's in Simon, Virginia. I don't know Simon. By the way, speaking of Virginia.
Excuse me, you don't know a lot of geography.
I'm watching Manhunt, which I'm loving on Apple TV, which I read the book, which I love the book. This is a lengthy question, but I'm just going to cut to the part about that Karen really wants to know. So if one wants stability, especially in retirement, why not just keep the money that would have been invested in bond funds in a high yield money market, keeping the money safe as well as available?
Oh my gosh, this question.
Let me finish. I realize money market rates can decrease, but at around 5% or 4.6. Now I'm guessing it will take a while for that rate to reduce to come back to around 2% a year, which is the average performance of the highest yielding bond fund recommended to me. That can't be true. Not if you look at the long haul.
All right. This is where we get into spurious thinking. Oh, okay. You go into a 5% money market today. It can drop, by the way, very precipitously. It could drop really fast. If interest rates, I'm not saying they will, but if interest rates go down and you're in a bond fund, your yield will sustain for much longer. Your money market fund yield will drop immediately on the day. Your bond fund will not. The yield will stay. Therefore, because the yield sticks around, the value of those higher yielding bonds will rise in a falling rate environment, which means, kicker, you get capital gains. You make money on your bond fund if interest rates go down. The reason why we've seen terrible average performance on bond funds over the past few years is because rates went up, causing bond values to go down.
You mentioned the capital gains. That's important. Here's the thing. Here's the reason I'd still use bond funds. That in the long haul, they've still made more money than CDs. In the long haul. And aren't you in it for the long haul? I think you are if you're an investor, not a speculator. So
we're really getting caught up in the short, in a bad case of short-termitis, which is not as dangerous a disease as hodgepodgeitis, but it's still debilitating. And there is a cure for that. Discipline.
Yeah.
Discipline.
Cleaning it up, not paying attention to what's going on at the moment. So, and with that in mind, if you need some help, we're here to do it for you. We've got advisors who are waiting. They're not going to sell you anything. They're going to look at your portfolio. They're going to help.
Now, if you want to be sold something, there's an Ed Jones office down the street.
Right around the corner. And then right around the next corner. And actually in the restroom at Ed Jones, there's another Ed Jones.
There's an Ed Jones office?
There's an Ed Jones office right there. Doesn't smell as nice as a regular one, but it's another one right there, nonetheless. So anyway, all kidding aside, talkingrealmoney.com and click on Meet an Advisor. And yes, I am, again, talking to people and loving it. So I got time again, so hit me.
And in the basement of most Ed Jones offices is the Fred Jones office.
Freddie.
Yeah, little Freddie. They put Freddie in the basement. You know, he's kind of
sorry about that.
Different Fred. Kid.
He's moving up.
He was a different kind of kid, so they had to keep Freddie in the basement. Anyway, are we done now?
That's it, man. That's all I got.
All right. Well, thanks for being there, all of you. We appreciate you, truly appreciate you a lot. We're so glad you're there. And we really love it when you like us enough to tell a friend or two. And if you hate us, we ask the following question of you.
Why?
Why are you listening?
Some people just, I heard you say that on a recent podcast, and I was driving along with my grandson, who every Friday now demands, when's McDonald on? Whenever I turn the machine on. But I heard you say that, but some people just like, they just want to tune in so they can yell, or just say, no, you're wrong. You're wrong again. You're wrong about crypto. You're wrong, et cetera. There's just people that's just part of their nature. So you're welcome to listen. But please don't get Don worked up. He's old. It's not good to have him worked up.
Yeah, come on. Be nice to old people.
Isn't that part of the creed?
Thank you all. I wish you all the very, very best. And of course, as long as we can keep flapping our lips and thinking about all of this financial stuff, we will be hanging out here with you talking real money.
The opinions and views expressed on this podcast were current on the date recorded. Opinions, estimates, forecasts, and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions constitute our judgment and are subject to change without notice, including any forward-looking estimates or statements which are based on certain expectations and assumptions. Although information and opinions given have been obtained from or based on sources believed to be reliable, no warranty or representation is made as to their correctness, completeness, or accuracy. Information presented on the podcast is not personalized investment advice from Appella Wealth. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for everyone. This podcast does not identify all the risks, direct or indirect, or other considerations which might be material to you when entering any financial transaction. Past performance does not guarantee future results, and profitable results cannot be guaranteed. We hope you realize that the information provided on Talking Real Money is for informational, educational, and hopefully enjoyable purposes only. The podcast is not trying to get you to buy or sell any financial products or securities. Instead, the program is provided as a public service by Appella Wealth, a fee-only registered investment advisor. Please see Appella Wealth ADV Part 2A on our website for information regarding Appella's fees and services. Appella Capital, LLC, DBA Appella Wealth, is an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. The firm only transacts business in the states where it is properly registered or excluded or exempt from registration requirements. Registration with the SEC or any state securities authority does not imply a certain level of skill or training. Appella does not provide tax or legal advice, and nothing either stated or implied here should be inferred as providing such advice. Thanks for listening, and please visit TalkingRealMoney.com for more information and important disclosure related to performance of any specific index or fund quoted in this podcast. Is anybody still listening?